kind of cool.
Okay, amazing. Cool. Well, thank you so much for everyone for coming. This is my first ever live podcast taping. So welcome. Welcome. Thank you so much. I would love to kick this off with just understanding who here is a creative or like considers themselves creative. Wow, we love people. I would love to know what you guys do, what you want to do.
Graphic design.
Love kicking this off with a coughing, amazing podcast. 1 second. Beautiful audio. Can't wait for this to air. Okay, let's try this again. Graphic design. What was the other, what were you saying? Music. Okay, right. Okay, writer.
Own
no,
it.
We don't.
Own
we don't it. Say trying. We say we
you are. A writer.
Okay, we are writers. Anyone else? So, oh, photography. We do a film photographer. Okay, okay. Is anyone into like product design or like want to make physical products? Is that in anyone's future vision board? Okay, we have one competitor.
One competitor.
Perhaps a co-creator, you know?
Yeah, co-creator.
Is a discourager.
Yeah, so just kidding. At the top, we collaborate. We don't compete. That's the thing. Right, what about anyone that is into podcasting or wants to start a podcast? Okay, love this. Are there any podcasts you guys listen to outside of In My Non-Expert Opinion, obviously? Yes, we love Stephen Bartlett. Okay, I would love to start this off then. If you could look to your right or left, anyone that said they were a creative, go support them, either follow their Instagram account, subscribe to their podcast, download their freebie, whatever it is. I would love for us to do that at some point before this whole event wraps up, because we all know like it's hard sometimes putting yourself out there. And that's why I wanted to do this event tonight. I really wanted to talk about putting yourself out there, being a creative, what it takes to be prolific. And we're all in different industries, so we'll get to know each other in just a second. But just a little bit about me. My name's Chelsea Reif. In case you didn't know, I think I know almost everyone in here. I run a podcast called In My Non-Expert Opinion. It started out called Oh My Pod. And then I found out there was another podcast with that name that had done 800 episodes. So just a hot tip for creatives, maybe Google the name before you take it. And eventually I was like, okay, what else could I call it? And I don't know if anyone can relate in here, but I didn't feel like an expert. I was like, I'm not an expert. I have no credibility. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about, but I like to podcast and I like to talk. So what could I call this podcast? And I called it In My Non-Expert Opinion because I wanted to be very on the nose. Like, I have a lot of opinions, but they're not all experts. So I just want you guys to know, if you're not an expert, your stories still matter. Your opinion still matter. Your opinion still matters and your viewpoint. So that's why I called it that. And now I've been running that for about 7 years now. Eventually, I realized I loved it so much. That's what I help people do. I help people launch and grow and monetize their podcasts. And I'm also a writer. I write for Substack, not for Substack. I write on Substack. And I have a publication called Slight Turbulence. So if you like to read about chaotic travel stories and heartbreak and all these fun things that we all go through, a lot of digital nomads in here, you would probably like my Substack. But I want to turn it over to Greg and Sifiso. Sifiso, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Well, good evening, everyone. I am Sifiso. I'm a creative director for a manufacturing startup here in Cape Town. We make bags, fashion bags. We founded the company as a project in the middle of lockdown, and it's grown since. So now it's starting to take shape as a business. When we started out, I didn't really consider myself much creative. But to date, I've got the title of a creative director, so I guess I got some spark here.
Also, if you guys just go ahead and feature the bags. Here's one. I'm holding it right now. There's going to be a pop-up at Gin Bar at 9 p.m., so just keep that in mind. Okay. Greg?
Hi, everybody. I'm Greg Duffy. I'm an indie pop singer-songwriter. I play guitar and the piano and love a good heartbreaking lyric. I have been putting out music for the past 10 years or so. I grew up as a pianist and picked up guitar along the way. And I focus on a lot of themes of love and heartbreak. And in particular, my area of interest is putting more LGBT stories on the forefront of pop music.
Amazing. Awesome. I told this story about In My Non-Expert Opinion. You have a story about your brand name. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yes. So we three partners. It was the first partner is Luveni. So unfortunately, Luveni isn't here tonight. The brand is named after her. She is a scientist, actually, but with a very creative part of it. She makes stuff. She's made some clothing and then bags. And I've always been an aspirant entrepreneur. So when I saw her work, I was just blown away that she kept it in a closet. And I said, the world has to see this, you know? So we started with making masks in the middle of COVID, and was very hands-on with that process. So her being a scientist, she knew so much about textiles and micron filters and all that stuff. And I was there just making sure this thing actually fits on the face. And we took it out there, and then one corporation bought us a bunch, and then the next thing we were making hundreds of them. And then the next thing it was t-shirts, and then from t-shirts into bags. So we sort of found a fit with making bags. So we make them from various materials. So leather is our primary material that's durable, high quality. And then crochet is just a more of a recent exploration. So the name Luveni is a closer name, which means hear us or listen. She's carried that name her entire life, and we just felt that it was fair to honor her as somebody that started this fire, that the brand carries, the product carries her name. But now we're under a rebranding exercise, actually. We've just pulled in a third partner who's a very good designer as well. And now we have a collaborative vision for what the brand could be. Now we named it Songa.
Ooh, this is exclusive news.
Worldwide premiere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Worldwide premiere. Actually, you guys are the first group of people outside the circle to actually know about it. And we have protected it, so you must protect your brand as well. So the name Songa, it simply means bread.
Ooh.
Yes. So we're creating a collection now called Isonga Solundu, which means bread for humanity. Simply because leather has this prestige. And we have found a way as a startup to actually create high-quality products that are accessible, just like bread. As much as it is a high-quality product, it's durable, but instead of having a 500% markup, a business can still survive at a 200% markup. And that's our stance right now. Hopefully we will remain profitable as we grow, but that's our approach right now. So Songa, pretty much a brand for everybody around the world, simple as just bread, you know, but simple, beautiful pieces that one could keep. And we're trying to tell our story through the products that we make.
It's beautiful. Okay, so exclusive access news here. Greg, a lot of musicians go by pen names, and I think it helps some people feel liberated to not know their first and last name, but you go by your first and last name. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's the real name, born and raised. I started putting out an artist project, like I mentioned, about a decade back, and I did it under my name. I remember I put out one song and I just didn't know what I might be if I was another name. And I met somebody who worked at a record label who like met me and heard that one song and they said, never change your name. Like, I can see it on a billboard one day. We haven't gotten on a billboard yet, but they did say that. And I think that was one thing that always stuck with me. It's sort of like, I Googled it also. There's not really another Greg Duffy that's doing it, which is helpful.
It's helpful. But
the other thing was that, like, I come from a pretty conservative, like, Irish Catholic background. And so part of owning my identity and where I came from and pairing that with the stories that I wanted to tell, I thought maybe somebody would see themselves more represented if I just used my real name. And I think it presented some challenges earlier on when, like, I thought about somebody from my high school seeing the song or something. It's hard when you think about people who know you seeing your art. That feels the most vulnerable. Strangers, I'm like, yeah, you can consume that. You don't know who I am. But I felt that there was something about keeping the name to be able to tell the story where I came from and where I got to and everything in between.
100%. My mom always says when I'm like, well, people are going to make fun of me. Like, this person, like, so many people are going to laugh. And she's like, when you say people, you're thinking of probably 1 to 3 people. And who is it? I'm like, my one coworker who used to sit next to me, my one friend from college. You know, it's like, it's not people. It's usually 2.
And it's people who are afraid to put themselves out there in the way that you are.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, this whole series is called The Creative Genius Playbook, and I really wanted to have people from different industries up here. So I'm curious what you guys think of when you think of creativity, or what does it actually mean to you?
Big question. I have gone on a journey with my understanding of what creativity is, but more recently I've started to think about it as channeling the divine, something that's bigger than me, and that takes some of the pressure off my shoulders to think something up from scratch. It's almost like writing or pulling it down, like finding it, like seeing it and finding it. I think a lot of us have the experience of finding inspiration randomly. You come up with like the best idea. It's often when you're not even trying to. You're like, I gotta write that down. It almost feels bigger than you. And so for me, creativity is like trying to channel or access whatever supernatural thing that I believe in, the universe or God or whatever. Like accessing it and getting it down. And that frees me a little bit from like some of the pressure I put on myself to make something that's so perfect all the time. And so creativity, I think, is channeling something bigger than myself and pushing it out.
Did you read The Artist's Way? Because I know you bought it recently.
Yeah. That's pretty, some of what I just said is pretty closely from The Artist's Way.
Oh, just plagiarizing. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, that original thought right there. It really resonated with me, though. But the author of The Artist's Way basically says that.
That's what I was going to say, because what she says is there's this voice, and you can't help but be a vehicle. And if it keeps tapping on you and tapping on your shoulder, it wants you to express it. And so it sounds like that's exactly what you're saying, is like you were chosen to share that message.
Yeah, and no one else could share it. And so to the degree that you feel comfortable with the idea that almost it's your responsibility to share it, that also helps motivate me to be like, I'm the only person who could share it quite like that. And so I want to do that.
100%. You
know? Yeah.
Sifiso, what about you? What does creativity mean to you?
So first, when creativity are considered a verb, simply creating stuff, guys, or should I say giving birth to your ideas. And the stance that we take towards the word is that it's just an ability that only just a select group of people have, like an endowment of sort. But just the virtue of us being human, it means that we are creative. We are able to create. So when you asked earlier how many people consider themselves creatives in a room, I was expecting the entire room to go up, you know? But the truth is, guys, it's in us. The only thing that it's just always the stretch between the idea and bringing it to life. That dash in between is what makes it seem so impossible. And truly, it is that tough. That's why maybe Greg feels that it's sort of a divine experience, because giving birth to that, holding that one idea out of a ton of ideas that we have, and then focusing on it and staying that dash and bringing it to life is what seems so impossible. But the truth is, guys, like, doing your scrambled egg in a different texture, you know, that's creativity. You had an idea and you gave birth to it. So for me, it's just that simple.
Yeah.
It's creative. And also you asked if somebody has any visions of creating physical products, and nobody put their hands up. I make physical products, you know, every day. It is quite a giving experience, you know, something that was just an idea yesterday, and then today you can actually hold it. I go crazy when we cutting a piece of leather, we make an adjustment of a buckle, it just comes together, and then I run out there and say, oh, look what we made. It's so exciting. It just even make selling this stuff so easy, because it's just me being so proud that we created something, you know. And we all get to do that in one way or the other, through music, through writing, you know, through photography, you've mentioned it, you know, and in many other forms. So, but it's innate, it's within us. And that's just how I see it.
I agree. I think a lot of creativity as manifestation, and I feel like manifestation got really like devalued during the life coaching boom in 2020, and everyone was like a manifestation coach and vision boarding, and I was like, what's happening here? And I think when we actually look at the definition of manifestation creativity, it almost means the same thing, where it's to bring something in your mind's eye into reality. So I love what you were saying about the scrambled eggs example. Like, I hear people being like, well, I'm not a good manifester, a good creator. I'm like, thinking about your laundry and then doing your laundry is creating the outcome of I did my laundry. So everyone is actually a creator. It's just not looked at in the same way. I think that's something that, this is why I wanted to have this conversation with multiple people, music industry, product design, podcasting, and writing. I think it shows that there's such a breadth of creativity, and I really hope that you guys all tap into like what it is in your inner world that you could bring to life. I'm curious, you know, when you get started, we all get really excited, right? When I started my podcast, I was like, woo, not Googling any names, calling it something that already exists, terrible idea. I got so excited. I remember being at work and I was like, I need a conference room. I ran into the conference room, I booked it, and I just started creating a logo on Canva. It was a mess. It was so embarrassing, but I was just so excited about it. You know, I was like, I want to bring it to the world. And then eventually I put it out into the world. And so can you tell us about like your first song or your first product design and what that experience was like?
The mask.
The mask.
That's how, there was the very first product that I worked on. Actually, my very first expression of creativity was probably in middle school. I've created a model of a house, so it was a school project. You know, I don't remember much in between until I was hands-on with creating a mask during lockdown. And the process really was just about making a product that would look good. So instead of using a synthetic material for the outer shell, we went for linen, which was like really fancy, you know. We went and sourced out a micron filter instead of just putting any basic filter in there. So I think the pride in creating a high quality product I'm a believer in marketer that I'm very happy to share with the next person. You know, it really informed the creative process from design to products being made and then to being finished. So it's crazy that I consider my very first creative product is actually a COVID-19 mask, but at least it sparked. Honestly, I know I lost my dad as COVID started as well. We don't know if we lost him through COVID-related ailments, but I also feel that it took, but that time also gave, mm-hmm. you know, because this simply putting together of mask helped me start a career that I have been postponing for a very long time. So that first product really got us down the path. And now we're excited about other avenues that we want to explore. As much as we are a bag company right now, but we actually consider ourselves a product company. So mm-hmm. we'll see what else we'll create.
Amazing.
Can I ask, was it hard to make those first masks, or were there several iterations before you got one that was ready?
Multiple. Yeah. Multiple. I'm quite a perfectionist,
yeah.
and we had a lot of iterations before I was confident enough to show it to someone. But now I do it the other way around. As long as you can put a minimum viable product that is commercially acceptable, take it out there, let somebody critique it.
Yeah.
I don't like this part. Would you change that? Would you change that? Because in the end, I'm not really making product for myself. It's for humanity out there.
Yeah.
You know. So it is quite hard to finally say, yes, this is the one. But yeah. the best approach, just create what you can create now. You'll find better tools and processes as you go.
Yeah.
And for you and your music, how do you remember the first song you created?
Yeah, I remember I stole my mom's MacBook and she had GarageBand on it. And so I got in there.
Wow.
And I was so afraid for anybody to find out. I was like, I can't have anyone know that I'm trying to do this. And I remember there's two songs that I wrote off the bat, and I started to produce them with big air quotes. And one was about me at my grandmother's funeral. My grandmothers were both living at that time. So that was made up. And the other was about me being a young child with my dad going off to war, which my dad did not go to war ever. Small town lawyer in Rhode Island. younger than the draft. Like that, none of that ever happened. I think I just had this like, great. Maybe my life wasn't like exciting enough to me, and I didn't feel like there's a story that I want to tell that's worth telling, so I had to like, tell these other stories. And
I have to interrupt. Your grandma's like, what is, we're not dead.
Well, I hid it. I didn't show anybody.
Oh, okay.
But the funny part about that is that I used a pseudonym because it was on my mom's laptop, so it showed up on her like iTunes library. And the pseudonym was Aaron Martin. And maybe Aaron Carter was big at the time, but it came up with double A's at the top of her library. So every time she played it, she'd be like, who's Aaron Martin? Like, I don't know. It sounds
weirdly
sounds amazing,
like Greg,
but I don't know who it is. Sounds really good, but he's been through some
Dad went to war.
Dad went to war in his grandma's past. And then I ended up entering a competition for this yogurt company, and I wrote a song, a love song about yogurt. Which that one felt actually pretty authentic. I was a big fan of the yogurt.
This is on YouTube, everyone.
This is
so
deep.
If you want to go on
I have
YouTube.
Trouble finding it on YouTube, but it is there.
No, it's there.
It's there. Oh, and wow. I've played it for friends. They've all, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I entered the competition and I won a month's supply of yogurt. Like some like a nominal like $30 prize. But it lit this thing up inside me that was like, oh, I can like write and tell a story and I can do this maybe. And I realized that even though when I grew up playing piano, I didn't always love it. Actually, I quit when I was probably 14 years old. That I actually had the skills I needed to be able to write with the piano, even though like I didn't love the classical music I was playing. And so I went back to the piano. I was like, oh, I can do this, but write how I want to write. And I can play covers of Coldplay, which is like the only thing I wanted to do. And so, yeah, the first products were like, I could find them. They're deep probably on my mom's old laptop, but they're not sonically, you know, they're not radio ready. But everything built from there, you know? And so I look back on, that's why I asked you about those early days of the first iteration of the product. And then from there, I also started collaborating with people, and those are the things that I started off with. And yeah, I learned a lot and just eventually got to the place where I was felt comfortable enough to put something out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the point both of you are making too is like you got started. I think a lot of creatives, raise your hand if you want to start something, but you're like, it has to be fucking perfect.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I need to hire an editor and get the best photographer and get the best. I waited to start my podcast for probably a year. I tried blogging, I tried photography, and it turns out can't shut the fuck up, so I like podcasting. So I remember buying a Hollywood level tape recorder, and someone was like, Chelsea, they use these on like movie sets. Like, I don't think you need this. And I was like, no, I need the top equipment. Like, I need the best equipment. I was Googling like who edits this person's podcast, like Serial's podcast. Like, I was like, I have to have the best producer. And then eventually someone was like, you need to just get it out there and see what happens. So I kept hearing this motto, like launch and adjust, launch and adjust. And it's what you were saying, like launch, get the feedback, adjust. So I always tell people that are creatives, go back to whoever you admire, go to their first episode, their first YouTube video, their first track. You're probably gonna die laughing because it's pretty embarrassing. I mean, we don't know what's happening in Greg's past that we wanna listen to. If you go to my first episode, it's with my chiropractor. I found it really interesting to learn about the spine. Yeah. I was like, I'm gonna interview her. And that was my first iteration. Do I think that was strategic or would build a business? No. But I think that's the point, is like you put one foot in front of the other and then you build upon it and then you just see what happens. Mm-hmm. So you put your first product out there. It's a mask. It's grandma's funeral song. It's interviewing your chiropractor. And then you're waiting for feedback or excitement. Or is this going to blow up? Is this going to go viral? Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that experience of what was the next step? Like, what were you expecting or what did you want to happen?
Yeah. So the first song that I put out was a song in probably 2016, and I had produced it by myself, and it was about a breakup. And I remember uploading it to the services that distribute, to services like Spotify and Apple Music, or at the time, I guess, iTunes. And I didn't know how any of it worked. And I remember just like being at work, opening my Spotify and typing my name in. I mean, like, I wonder if it worked, you know? And then there I was, and there was the song. And I was like, wow, that feels crazy. But it wasn't that hard in the end, actually. It was just like I had to figure out how to do that, and then I was there, and then my friends were like, oh my God, you're on Spotify. You know, it was like my high school, and I was like, oh, yeah. So it was this feeling of affirmation from that. The funny story about that song is I eventually took it down because I started making music that I felt was better, and I eventually liked the song so much that I reproduced it from scratch, and it's now, it is out, and it's a song called Make You Stay, and it's on my last album, but it was put out 8 years ago, and then I took it down and redid it, and now I'm happier with what it sounds like, or it's more reflective of what I do now, but yeah, I guess I thought, like, if I made something good enough, it would just blow up now. And I've had definitely, like, a journey with what it means to market your work. And you could, you know, I think we all know artists that are really good that make good stuff, not even just in music, but in other art forms. And you're like, why isn't this bigger? You just don't know why it's not bigger. And a lot of that's marketing, which we can get into. But I think I thought it would just happen if it was good enough, and I felt like I was making stuff that might be finally good enough. And so I think initially I was proud and affirmed in that first experience, and then like pretty deeply discouraged, like, oh, wow, I guess I have to, what it felt like, I have to sell out, quote unquote, to get people to hear it, and I don't feel like doing that. My art should speak for itself. And that's been a journey that I've been on ever since, and that I continue to be on that journey.
Yeah, we'll definitely get more into that.
Yeah.
I'm curious if you said, what was your experience after you put out the mask? It sounds like you put a lot of attention to detail and you wanted it to stand out. So yes. What was the next step? Were you like, let's try other products? Like, let's see if this blows up and we're like the number one COVID-19 mask people. What was the expectation?
So the expectation is we thought it would be like a citywide adaption of our product, but it didn't really go that way. Our business has been primarily growing through B2B orders. So a few corporations did order our pieces, but then of course there was the market was overflooded with supply, prices started coming down. It was just quite ridiculous to sell a mask at $100, although we've put so much into creating it. So but to date with the products that we make, first, it's a generic product, I must say. Of course, our products are not really life-changing, you know. So to really stand out and have your product, like you did the other day, somebody to see it and think it's worth their money, it truly is a challenge, you know. And the role of marketing, of course, is really big, you know. But the quality of the product truly is what, in my opinion right now, is what needs to be right first, you know, before you start putting gasoline on that fire. Because as soon as it catches fire, then, I mean, your processes and your product quality and control needs to be in place. So, yes, we haven't really had the success that we think we should have, but that we're aiming for. But we're seeing growth, you know, like one person that supports at a time. And they tell a friend, and then they follow on our not-so-active social media page. Now we've got like 500 followers in 3 years. But we celebrate, though, either way, you know, like that. It used to be just a page with one post and zero followers. But there are people that thought, okay, there's out of millions of pages out there, well, I kind of like what these guys are doing. Mm-hmm. So it's a vote of confidence that people keep making, either with a like on our social media or perhaps $100 when they're buying a small card holder. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just want to point out, because you brought up the numbers thing, when people are like, oh, I only have like 200 followers, who's going to read my blog or who's going to do this? Right now there's, what, 20 of you in here? And to me this feels like a big deal. So I'm just like, imagine 500 people in here, like 500 people looking at your products. Like that's, think of this room and then think of it that way, you know?
Wow, okay.
We're just having therapy up here, a little breakdown.
I get it, yes.
I would say for me, actually, it was a lot different. I just liked creating. I feel like it is a big piece of me that just feels like I can't not do it. So when I started my podcast, I had no expectations of like, I want to get signed by Spotify or I want to get brand sponsors. I was like, I just love doing this. I think it's so fun to interview people and talk to other people. Like, then I found out the opportunities is like, you can interview your favorite author for free and you can, oh my God, now I can interview this influencer and pick her brain. I almost get free coaching and now I'm getting like my birth chart reading for free. It just opened up all these doors. And then people started inviting me to speak on in their programs. And I was like, whoa, this is not the expectation. But again, I kept putting one foot in front of the other. Eventually, podcasting became really big. Alex Cooper from Call Her Daddy got a $60 million Spotify deal. And I was like, I want a $60 million Spotify deal.
Yeah.
So then it became the question of, do I podcast for fun or do I podcast for business? And that's what I want to get into now, is like the kind of selling your soul argument. Mm. Greg, I think this is really prevalent in music. You want to create what you want to create and you just want your work to speak for itself. Can you walk us through that fork in the road and how you've dealt with that?
Yeah, this is something I've faced more recently, like in the last year, in trying to be honest with myself about what I want out of music. And what I want is to be full-time touring artist who can sell tickets all over the world. That's what I want. So what does it take to get there? What is everybody who has that, what do they do? And they do a good job of marketing. That's pretty, like, that's true for everybody who can get to the place that, or is it the place that I'd like to get to? And so the artist way, you mentioned it earlier, I'll probably mention it again before the end of the podcast, really helped me get to a place where if I connect to the reason why I make the art, and for me, I make the music that 14, 15, 16-year-old me would have loved to have seen or heard to make him feel more understood, seen, confident, courageous, in the process of discovering who I was and accepting who I was and being proud of that. So that's what I want to make, because there's somebody who's 16 right now who's struggling in the way that I struggled in the thing that I feel like I have come to a place where I've not only overcome but come to love about myself. And so there's a life force underneath the art that I create. And if I'm out there doing that and someone sees it and it positively impacts their life, I feel like I'm doing something worthwhile with my life. And so when you get to the marketing aspect, you're like, oh my God, like making a TikTok feels like selling my soul. I'm like, I have to oversimplify the message. It's not nuanced. It feels like I have to learn a dance. You know what I mean? Everybody's trying to go viral with a dance. It's like, that's not really me, right? But if I can commit to those things by reconnecting with why I do it every single time, then it's worthwhile. And I can do things like any job that I don't love in order to do the things that I do love, or in order to achieve the goals that I do want to achieve. And there's a quote that a friend of mine just mentioned to me as I was sort of complaining about, oh man, I gotta like promote my music, not just make music. And he mentioned there's this performance artist, Marina Abramovich, who makes quite a different art form than me, but she says something like, half of art is emails. And you gotta accept that part of art if you wanna make art. And I was like, totally. Like, how often are you, Chelsea or Spiso, making like sending emails and like administration and logistics and project management? It's like all these things that are not really the heart of the art form, but they're necessary. And so I've come to the place, and I'm still working on this, where marketing and promoting are necessary to get the art form heard. And if I believe in what I'm doing has a positive impact on people, and more people will hear it as a result, they'll be impacted as a result of me pushing the message out there, even in ways that don't always make me feel comfortable, then it's totally worth it, and I can commit to that.
I feel like product design might be a little different, because you're working with people, and like you were saying earlier, this is for people to use in their physical hands. It might not be the like emotional expression maybe as a song. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong. So I'm curious then for you, what was that moment of like, for example, like the Instagram, like do we keep posting even though we don't like Instagram? Have you ever dealt with that fork in the road of like, how do we really want this to be out in the world?
Yeah. So my experience with building the business is, at first we made the commitment that we are building a business. Now the business is building us. Mm-hmm. And then through that process, it starts showing you your weaknesses as well. And as much as I enjoy telling and sharing stories, I figured that I'm not so savvy when it comes to social media. So we're entrusting that responsibility to a social media manager. You know, there was a departing remark. I got two philosophies that I approach my work with. The first one, especially for everybody that's having their very first few steps in their creative journey, the idea of giving it away, should I say, not for free, but being generous enough to share. share the work. I think most of us, we create something because we want it to be so perfect, and then we sort of hoard it and keep brushing it and polishing it and turning it around and looking at it. And I do that a lot because I make physical products. But as soon as we get it out there, then the process just feels lighter and more enjoyable. So I would say whatever you create, back again to it may be just basic level, commercially acceptable, get it out there, and then it builds the confidence of you, oh, I can actually launch, you know? And then, of course, as you say, then buff it up as you go. My second philosophy is in every project, there's always the visionary, there is the believer, and then the general. So Luveni is the visionary, the artist, you know? She started this thing out. She has this urge of creating things. And I've always admired people that can do that because I cannot make anything. Well, not until now. But also when it comes to building the product, I don't know how to knit, thread a machine or put a stitch together. I'm just horrible at it. But of course, I've been trusted with the role of creative director because they can see that I can listen, I can connect with the artist, I know what they're trying to create, and everybody that's involved as we build product, then I'm a believer. Then that's where marketing comes in then, because you truly need somebody next to you that see beauty in what you do. It is really hard, I think, especially in Luveni's shoes. It's been so hard for her to put herself out there. She doesn't even want to take a picture. She doesn't want people to see her. She just want to make. You know, she's truly a homebody. You know, like knitting, or that's just her stuff, you know? So I saw that, so this needs to go out there. But as for the day-to-day running of the business, then I realized that I gravitate more towards customer-facing processes. So the idea of being in the studio and spending the entire day designing, no, I just want to fix a design problem, get it together, pass it over to a product builder. When it's finished, then I go out there and do this. Meet the people, share these stories, hear what they want, because I think I have that servant's heart, you know, just want to give. And then you definitely need the general then who would run the back end side of things, like you said, administration. I don't enjoy it either. Mm-mm. Bookkeeping drives me nuts, you know. So in every creative endeavor, I think, you try to build it, it builds you, it shows you where you're weak, and you decide which part of the process you want to work on, that you enjoy, that you want to improve, and the parts that you're not so strong on, you can pass it over. Yeah. For instance, the dead partner that we just pulled into the business, he's a ninja when it comes to our computer-aided design. So the traditional way of creating our product is we would sketch by hand and then cut by hand. So now we sketch, transpose that design to a computer-aided design, then it gets through machine cutting, which helps us also simplify production processes, push down cost, then we stay true to our values as a brand, to be the brand that's accessible to the people. You know, so that was just another way of us moving the product, the brand together, moving it forward and not being so inundated with the other parts of the process that you're not so good at. Yeah. Also, I don't know how I'm going to do on TikTok. I don't even, I think I have an account on TikTok, right? I'm hardly there.
I can just show you how to dance. We can do a little. Yeah.
We'll do one after
okay,
this.
Okay, great. I got rhythm, so I'll probably catch up.
More than I can say.
So just the idea of it being TikTok, I was like, this thing is here to steal my time. I'm not going to look at it, you know? But truth be told, it's a very powerful marketing tool, and every creative, I think, that should be there.
Yeah. And Chelsea, I think you've said before, like, if your work, speaking of the minimal viable product, putting it out, if your work 3 months ago doesn't make you say, oh, man, like, I don't know if I put that out today, I improved, like, beyond that, then maybe you're not doing it right.
Yeah.
Your work should make you cringe a little, I think. 3 months, 6 months ago.
Yes, it
you
has.
You'd be proud of it still. Like, that makes sense for where I was, but I make... I'm prouder or I've grown in identifiable ways.
Absolutely. So if I may just add on that, actually, you mentioned earlier that you were so excited that you just threw yourself in there, went and bought the best equipment because you wanted to get it right. Mm-hmm. But I think that desire that you had or the excitement around your creative endeavor, it's what actually got you going.
Yeah.
So I think for everybody that just want to give birth to an idea or a feeling through music, you know, or through words, I think it needs to have that degree of excitement, you know, that charge. Because if it's not there, that's when then 6 months later I have designs. Oh, there's a song. Oh, I've been thinking, but it's not really out there, you know. So maybe that's also a very good barometer of sort of feeling if what you're trying to express is truly from the heart or perhaps it's just you imposing. Mm.
I feel like there's, the way I felt it was like a lightning bolt, and I call it kind of the holy shit moment. I don't know if wow. anyone's felt that. And I just felt it literally at work. And I was like, I have to do it right now. I can't wait. I'm going to book this conference room, get it done. I'm curious, have you guys ever had that where you're like, I just need to do it right now? Mm. Okay, I'm seeing, yeah. And so for me, that got me excited. And then talking about like buying the best equipment and trying to be the best, I didn't even know how to work the freaking recorder. And then I kept messing the tapings up. And then I would literally start booking guests. And then I'd be like, we just lost the whole audio file because I don't know how to use this thing. So I think that's a lesson in like, let yourself be a beginner, enjoy the obscurity, like be messy, be shitty at it, like throw spaghetti at the wall. Because imagine it going the other way. Let's say you did one song and you went viral and they want you to headline at Coachella and you're like, I've never even spoken into a group of 20 people before, yeah. you know? Like you need to be a beginner and build that skill set because there's also something about like throwing yourself in the deep end with cinder blocks and you're like, I don't even know how to swim in this pool. Mm. So I'm curious for you guys too. We're talking a lot about marketing and the elements of like what you don't like to do. And it sounds like really it's collaboration is what we're talking about here. I read a Substack post. If anyone's not familiar with Substack, it's like a writing platform and you can subscribe to different people's blogs essentially. But he was talking about galaxy brain, ecosystem brain, and maybe ground brain or something. And so you, kind of what you were saying, you have the visionaries, you have the realists, and then you have the people that are executing. Mm. And we all seem like we're kind of in different areas of that. I feel very visionary. And so I hire people to be like, Chelsea, what the fuck are you doing? That's not possible today with your budget and your timeline. And I have people that are like, I get it. Let's go. Like, I'm here to help you. I'm here to cheer you on. And so I'm curious, who are your support systems or who do you lean on in times where you're like, I don't know how this is going to happen? Wow.
Okay. So I have a very social, a small social circle. Unfortunately enough, Luveni and I now are a couple.
Mm. Yes. Another you secret know, being revealed to me.
yes. Truly my pillar of strength. Mm. I think a scientist's brain helps as well, you know? She can come across very rational and she's a jumper just like you. She just want to get things done now, you know? But I'm quite a black sheep in my family, so I'm the first entrepreneur in our generation. My last employer was 2019. I just put up a small pocket of savings and I said, I'm going to start a business. Just when I was getting excited, looking for a business, COVID hit. So that business came in an unexpected form, you know, because I was really like chilling, drinking wine, enjoying those lockdown days. And then Luveni and I found out about these machines that she has locked up in her brother's garage and then we pulled those out and dusted them off and started making product. So yes, she truly is. She's one person that tolerates my ideas at 2 a.m. in the morning or 7 p.m. because I'm just always like, oh, maybe we could do this. We could improve that process like this, like this, like this. And she's been very, very good. But as far as my family, yeah, it took a while for them to catch on. They thought I was crazy. At some point, my mom called me, was like, ah, there's a new hospital being built in the neighborhood. Maybe you could come and become a porter.
Become a porter. When a porter is a
so they push trolleys in a hospital and things like that. You know, just because I've always been searching for a niche and a place to start, and I've always said I want to build a business. I want to build a business. I went to business school for a year, did very well, but then I quit. Never went back. So I've sort of they've been unsure about what this guy is doing. So when we started this business, which still looks like nothing when you look at our social media pages. But like I did mention, we're growing very strong with corporate orders. So in their eyes, they're still thinking, oh, we're not sure what he's doing. Mm. You know, so that family structure support isn't really there. And then I do have a few friends, but they're not so entrepreneurial. So it's a matter of, oh, yeah, nice product. And then they'll buy when they can. You know, so there's not really much support. And it is quite tough.
Before we get to Greg, I'm curious then if your family is, you know, like, hey, when are you going to get a real job, that type of thing? Yeah. Or, what are you doing? How are you making money? Like, what do you think keeps you going?
Ooh, my dreams, honestly, as cliche as it may sound. You know, I admire people that do great things. And nobody has ever told me that I can, but the feeling has always been there that I could make a contribution. So that keeps me going that, okay, and whatever I do, some of you in the room have met me with, the other work that I do, I truly pour my heart out, you know, because it's just that idea of adding value where I can. So that's what truly keeps me going. And every other successful entrepreneur or artist, like you said, Greg, your very first song, you're not so proud of, you had to remaster it. Mm-hmm. You know, they go through that first adventure, it fails, and then on to the next one, and the next one, and one day they are this great artist or this great entrepreneur. So I know that this is part of the journey, and the lack of support and the failings that we're having now and the slow growth, I just know it's part of the process. So just that vision is what pulls me.
Yeah, it sounds like what Greg was talking about earlier, that like divine voice that's like, I'm not going to leave you until you get this out there.
You got to get it out there.
Got to get it there. Wow.
I wanted to ask, Saviso, if we can, what's it like to work with your partner, your romantic partner?
She's not here.
Here's what's interesting. Yes. She might see the recording. You know.
Yeah, this is going to be live.
Our very first fight wasn't really a romantic one. It was over a product design part. Hmm. I was so bad, you know, I expressed myself and I stormed out and she said, I am not changing it. So then again, you know, the commercialization of an artist's work is a very sensitive subject because for them, it's their baby, you know. They think this color is the best. And you're like, we're just polarizing half of the market with this color, you know. Like, and they just want it done their way. So, but it's 4 years deep now in the relationship. Yes. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, us having our dreams come together and creating a unified vision of what is possible. It has helped us work better as a couple because of all the pressure that we carry in the business. So personal life is just easy, you know. I know it's not the case with everyone out there that actually works with their partners, but for us, it's just been beautiful. And now that we've grown and we understand the importance of opening up what we do to other people and leveraging through the skills and expertise, it just makes our lives even easier because things are moving faster.
100%. Greg, I know your recent album, which, by the way, we had a listening party here like a month ago for his recent album, and you were telling us a little bit about your songs and how actually it helped you maybe start to build a bridge with your family. And I'm wondering, can you share, when we're talking about support systems, what has been your family support, your friend support? What does that look like?
Yeah. So I mentioned earlier, I come from a fairly conservative family. And so identifying as gay has not always been the easiest thing when it comes to family dynamics. I'm one of six kids. And so the fortunate thing about it is my siblings are like an army in support of me. And it's a beautiful thing. And I've seen us all grow together as a result. And I'll say, after I came out, I have several nieces and I think I have 9 nieces and nephews. I became the godfather to like all of their kids. They were like, I honestly think that being gay, it helped them see that I was maybe like well-rounded or I was a carving my own path, and that was something that they wanted their kids to have an example for, which felt really validating. But in terms of my parents have struggled a lot with my sexuality and how I identify. And the music, it's been hard because music is such a, I tell stories about my love life in my music, and the subjects of my songs are other men when they're love songs. And, you know, I've been out for a fair amount of time now, and my parents have definitely grown so much, and I'm really grateful to see the growth, but it's never as fast as I might like it to be. But my music and sharing it, my dad is super musical. My whole family's really musical, but my dad in particular, and that's where I got all of my musical talent from and my inspiration from as a kid and wanting to learn instruments. And I've, over time, sent my dad my songs because he loves music. You know, I'll send them to him before they're put out in the real world when I'm still producing them. I'm like, hey, what do you think of this? I think I might change this up or I might do that, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. And
he has been so supportive of the music, even when it's a love song or a breakup song, obviously about a male subject, it's a way for us to have a vocabulary to talk about it. And he's been, you know, I have some texts that I like revisit from him after I send him the songs that like make me tear up, where he's like, I really love what you did with the chord progression here. And, you know, the piano did something so unexpected. And I think that's so unique the way you decided to do that. And it's his way of communicating, I think, in a slightly safer way. Like, I support you. Like, I love you. I support you. We have a lot of differences, but this is a common language that we can share and come together on. And so, to be honest, I've never looked at my parents as a support system, especially after I came out. I have such a like an amazing network of friends, and I have five siblings who are very supportive. But the change that I've seen over time in my parents, and continue to see, and would love to continue to see, and I think I will, specifically through sharing my music and telling like really, I think, universal stories of love and heartbreak that they could relate to in a way, in a medium that feels safe enough, I think, for them to comment on and absorb, has really changed our relationship for the better. And it seeing how far they've come through that, it's one of the most meaningful parts of like my music career, because I don't know if it would have happened in the same way without it, you know?
Yeah, your creativity almost like built this bridge.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
I would say for me, my family is almost too supportive, where my mom listens to every podcast and has
You're like, you
feedback.
Don't need to do all that. Yeah. Oh, no.
You should do this. You should do this. And I'm like, Mom, you're not my target audience. Stop listening. My dad recently subscribed to my Substack, and I talk a lot about heartbreak and sex and what I've learned. And I was like, we're removing you as a subscriber.
Oh, no.
So just like practical tip, don't be afraid to like mute people and remove them and block them. I had my friend's mom comment something on my Instagram post, and I was like, blocked. We're not dealing with that. So just a practical tip was like, I don't know. For me, I think a lot of people that want to put their creative work out there, you're probably stunted by like, what's my dad going to think of this when he reads it? What's my sister going to say when she hears this song? And I think that's what paralyzes a lot of us, is the fear. Yeah. And so for you all, like, what was that thing that you're like, okay, you know, I don't care what my parents are going to think anymore. I don't care if this causes an argument. Like, yeah. What got you over that hump?
I'd like to answer that first.
Go.
Well, just as I'm listening to your story, you know, I don't know if you guys think we should actually maybe a round of applause for Greg's dad.
Shout out to Bob.
Shout out, Bob.
Bob on the pod.
Wow. Because the way you're telling your story, I could tell it through your work and your art, your music. Your family probably didn't know how to relate to you after you've told them about your sexuality, you know? And also, that's what I've been struggling with my entire childhood life as well. My parents were really stereotypical parents, staunch Christians. You get a you had a chance to do something once, and that's it. There were no do-overs, you know? And every time I tried to express myself, I just felt there was a disconnect. And I never actually had that chance with my dad until he was gone.
Mm.
You know, he always, as a Zulu son, there's truly a set path for us. Get a job, get a wife, get some kids, put respect on our name, and that's it. I had a trip to Europe. I made an international call. There was before WhatsApp. And then the only thing he said on the phone was, you are busy running around the world and all of your peers are getting married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just would come home. And I was so excited to share my experience and how it's been and blah, blah, blah. So it's really incredible that you had a chance to connect with your dad.
Mm.
And I have forgotten the question because I was just like,
so
it touched me, so inspiring. I just wanted to comment on that. Yeah.
Well, I think your story is, how did you eventually move past that fear of, you know, disappointing your parents?
I left home.
Oh, okay. You just ran away.
So, well, pretty much. I eloped, I guess, to Cape Town. This will be my 10th year, you know.
Amazing.
I came here on vacation, and then I saw how liberal people were here compared to my town, and I told them that I got a job in Cape Town, and it was words that they wanted to hear, of course, you know. And my mom was quite easy with it. Dad kind of figured, this one is not really like got a job there. He's probably running away. So when I remember the day I left in the morning, I had my bags. I had told them months before that I'm leaving for Cape Town. They're like, oh, yeah, yeah. Because nobody in our house has ever left. My eldest sister never left our province, which I think will be a state in the U.S., you know. I'm the first kid to leave town. So my parents didn't believe me that I would do it. And then months came closer to my moving date. The morning I was leaving, dragging my bags, they were driving out of the driveway. And I said, I'm leaving. And then mom was like, you know, this is home. You can always come back, blah, blah, blah. My dad was like, you can't leave. There's nothing I'm going to say, you know. He was super unhappy. So it's just about close to being 10 years. I always tell people that I'm pretty much a 10-year-old old man, you know. Because only then I realized that I didn't really need their support. I'm grown enough to actually be on my own. And it's just the smiles and the admiration that I see in their faces every time when I go back home. Because I guess that I'm far from home. Nobody, there's no elder looking after me here. I can take care of myself. And I'm still the son they raised, you know. And slowly they're coming through and they're a bit more tolerant and a little bit more curious. And of course, I send some money. So it's a good thing, you know, like, okay, all right, yeah, okay, maybe we can just be easy on him now. But I guess I just never really got, I never really dealt or got over it. I just left. And leaving was really, so basically I removed myself from that environment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And now I just try and surround myself with people that are on a similar path.
I would say to add to that, if you're maybe in a situation where you're like, I can't just leave, I can't just move, I don't have that privilege or the finances, find online communities. I started developing my writing career by joining writing circles on Zoom, joining random like Substack workshops and just immersing myself in writing communities because I didn't have friends that wrote. I don't have an MFA in writing. I don't have that background. So I felt very insecure about that. And so I think if you can't, again, leave home, immerse yourself in the digital world. Yes.
Yeah. Or maybe something a little less erratic than that is my experience with people that are around me is people have an identity of who you are. And as you grow and explore more of yourself and change and express more of yourself, they don't think you can. Or they think they know this person, you know. So the more you create things and then share ideas and I mean, there's not even a friend of mine here tonight. Because, like, Sifiso on a podcast, you know, like, isn't that, like, stuff that successful entrepreneurs do? I mean, he's still working out of his garage. What is he doing?
Yeah.
But they won't say it to your face. So maybe don't wait for that permission.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying divorce your friends. I know pop culture says, get rid of them, spend less time, focus on you. No, that's what I'm saying. But just don't expect them to be there, be your cheerleaders, and buy your product, and support you, and show up.
Yeah,
because they don't really take you seriously, because they know their old version, maybe that just drank beer and talk nonsense with them.
16-year-old Sifiso, who was, you know, a kid with some ideas and whatever.
Yeah, you know, he always does this, and then quit it, and tried this. They just never think that, oh, actually, you could create this.
Yeah.
Actually, you are doing this, you know? Yeah. It's been quite an experience. Even people that we worked with when we were starting out, we used to do like small little projects with them. And then when we started doing much bigger projects with them, and the energy just shifted, you know, because they used to be giving advice to us. And then now we have an opinion on how things are supposed to be done. And we like sticking on high quality standards, and they used to cut in corners. Now it's that, who are you to tell me not to do things this way? So I guess sometimes the people that are around you, maybe they might not be the people that will make the journey with you.
Yeah, I think sometimes having a chip on your shoulder helps motivate you.
Yeah.
My podcast started after a breakup. I was like, fuck you. I'm going to start a podcast and be so successful, and you're going to hear about it. Funny enough, 2 years later, he DM'd me. He's like, just want to say your podcast is actually like really good. I was like, yeah, it is fucking good. And thank you for the motivation.
Yeah.
So I think having sometimes that, you know, sometimes proving people wrong is really good motivation.
Please don't dump people every 2 years.
I need constant breakups to keep me fueled.
Can I just say something on that too?
Yeah.
Is like, how do we get over this fear of the judgment of other people? I'm not. Mm-hmm. Like, I deal with it all the time.
Yeah.
And like, I think what I've learned too is that there's like just a few moments of bravery, like fearlessness is not having fear. It's like doing what you want to do in the face of it regardless. And so putting out a song that's, you know, feels extremely vulnerable, and I'm like, oh my God, I just can't even imagine what people are gonna say or think, whatever. I think about that all the time. But I also think about like a lifetime of not putting anything out because I'm so afraid to put it out. And I think over time I've developed the muscle, and maybe a lot of us have developed the muscle to know, to have the confidence that we can have the difficult conversation when, if and when. A lot of times it doesn't even happen.
No.
We think that the negativity that's going to come our way is usually bigger than it actually is. But also if it does, you have the tools to just deal with it. Like stop fighting the invisible monster of being like, oh, I think everyone's going to say this. It's like, I haven't had nearly as much negative feedback as I've thought, and it's gone so much better than I ever thought it would. But I still think all the time about especially my parents, what they're going to think, but also other people in general. But yeah, it gets a little easier every time.
Yeah, I think you just build the muscle of like, okay, I'm bracing for impact, yeah, but okay, yeah, impact's not that bad. It's really not.
Yeah.
I think, I'm curious, like, has anyone in the audience wanted to start something and you're just like, my parents are going to listen or watch or read this? And is that why you haven't started it? A little bit.
Yeah.
Half the time, our parents don't even know how to use tech. I just want to say that. My mom was like, good luck with your Slack channel. I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Was that about this podcast?
My Substack.
Oh, the Substack.
I was like, okay, good thing you don't know how to use Substack. Mm-hmm. But I also think what Greg's point, what you're making is like, you probably lean into the DMs you've gotten, the emails, people that have told you your song changed my life. I finally got to express myself. And that's what keeps you going, is actually more of the qualitative data versus the quantitative.
Yeah. Yeah, if one person, and I have received those, you know, messages that are like, this song, I just felt like I hadn't heard something like it before that saw me in the way that I feel. And there's not so many, but just one feels like, that is the life force. That is why I do it. I think if I sold out like an arena for 10,000 people, if I didn't get that feedback, if I didn't get the qualitative, this changed my life for the better, the arena probably wouldn't mean so much. And if I decided to dilute the art in favor of being like maybe more commercial or something, or not opening up as vulnerably and telling my story how it actually happened for the fear of my parents' judgment or something, then I wouldn't reach those people. So yeah, those messages totally keep me going. Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? Like, what keeps you going when you don't have maybe the sales there or the metrics or the website visitors that you're looking for? Yeah.
Well, to start with, actually, we don't have a website. I know it could be quite embarrassing for a 21st century business. I mean, Shopify is out there.
It's coming with the rebrand.
Yeah.
Yes, with the rebranding, new approach.
Yes.
You know.
New website.
Pardon me on the question again?
Just how do you keep going if you're not seeing the quantitative, like the sales visitors, et cetera?
Yes. So my role in the project is that of a business developer. So the slow sales are a good reminder that actually delayed gratification is a big piece in what we do. What also delayed our growth is the business started funding my lifestyle as well, which is a very simple one, you know. But also it's like taking the kids' lunch money. You cannot really starve the project. But now the approach as we grow is shifted. So when the sales are not coming, I just know that it's a feedback mechanism that there are parts of the business that are not really working the way they're supposed to. Mm. So there's a constant feedback feed, you know, or almost not so scientific data, because we don't really have a structure to look at numbers. But it's just when one system is not functioning the way it's supposed to, then it just shows up in the lack of business or product not coming out, and so we keep moving and we improve products and we improve processes. I'm in the process of getting a mentor as well, because this is my very first venture. So all of my business understanding has been through textbooks and podcasts and videos, you know, but doing the actual thing is really different. So I think we talked about this the other day, that I know how business works in my mind, but then there's knowing physically how to do it and the emotional part as well, and which is really hard when business is slow and You're not moving the product that you thought was the best, which is what another lesson that moved me to, instead of creating a perfect product and put it out there, after I've printed 50 pieces, nobody buys it. Mm. And then you realize that, oh, actually, I'm not really making this for myself, you know? It's truly for the people out there. So that MVP goes out there, get that feedback, and then that's what keeps us going. That, oh, we're getting better. We're improving processes. We're getting this feedback. And then, oh, we sold 50 pieces of that. Oh, okay, then this is a good direction. So I think I also want to just add on that something that you mentioned earlier. I think the sooner you ally with failure, the easier the process gets. Mm. You know, like I said, I'm from a very strict background where you get to do things once. That has held me back in my life in many, many things, you know, but I'm changing, you know, and I have a very strong stance now where I'm quite more tolerant to failure and things moving slow and then people pushing things back, orders being canceled, because I know that's where the training is. You know, in the end, that is why some people will build something big, they lose it, and then they build something even bigger. Because it wasn't really the thing, you know. The thing made them so they can make the thing. So it's like that relationship keeps fitting between the two.
It sounds like you have a really high failure tolerance. Have you heard of that word? Has anyone heard of that word? Yeah, where you can just constantly fail and you don't take it personal.
Oh, I do.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay.
Big time.
And how do you how do you get through that?
My threshold is actually getting shorter and shorter, which is something that I'm starting to really appreciate, you know. I told you earlier, my little car snapped the clutch cable today, right? I was just downtown, put it on gear 2, a trick that I learned from someone, then I drove it that way for about 7Ks just to get to the spare shop. But I had to fix it because I got product that I had to bring here so I can share with you guys. So I got my hands dirty. My nails are cut today because they were like, they had grease in them, you know. So that's just been my new attitude, as I guess entrepreneurship teaches you that, especially at the startup level, because you're not leveraged. There's not, you can't say, oh, there's a problem, you fix it. It's yours. Mm. You know, it breaks, you fix it, you know. And in this middle of this runaround, I had to go speak to service providers to get product cut for us. And it's always pressed that they do it in a shorter time than normally they do for other people. So my negotiating skills are getting better as well. But it's just that failure thing, it's just become something that I've accepted. And also, every president, right, there are elections this year. More than 50% of every population rejects a president. Oh, or a little less than 50%. And then the other 50 says, we like this guy, you know. So we need millions of people to reject us so that we can be a head of state. And I guess it's the same with business and every other project. There's millions of people that will say, no, no, no. But you're just going to find your tribe. People that will say, we love what you do. And I mean, in with 400 million people in the U.S., even if you had just like 5 million strong, passionate followers, you will have a thriving career.
Totally.
Greg, I'm curious for you with like failure within music, like what would you consider a failure? Is it like song downloads or flop? Like how would you describe that?
Yeah, I think it's a moving target all the time. There's different versions of it. Some would be this song didn't perform as well as my last song, numbers wise. I didn't sell as many tickets at this show as I did at my last show. There's a lot of different metrics like that you're constantly confronted with quantitatively. And the target always moves. That's what I try to remind myself, is like, if I put a song out 2 weeks ago, if I had those numbers, you know, on my first couple of songs, I would have been over the moon. I would have been so psyched. And now I'm like, oh my God, it's got to get bigger, faster. I just got to figure out how to. And even in the 2 weeks, I've had like certain days of, oh, the streams peaked here and then they went down. Like what happened? I remember being so excited when I saw the peak and then it went down. I adjust so quickly to the new peaks that I reach. And so I think trying to reconnect with why I do it, I really like to make music. And if nothing else happened, if no one heard it, would I still do it? Yeah. Like, wow. So that's a good, okay, that's a good thing. I'm going to keep doing it. But I feel like I confront the failure of it all the time. And I try to remind myself that I'll feel it today, and I'll feel it if I'm at the top of my game. And I used to work at Sony Music and work with like artists that were
household names, and they were stressed all the time. They were like not super happy, you know, at least in the context in which I saw them. And so it's a good reminder that it's not going to, I could sign a deal and get to the top, quote unquote, and still probably be stressed about making the next mountain peak. And so I try to get perspective, but I get up and down. I mean, the short story is I'm up and down about it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me too, like my creativity turned into my business, which started complicating it because I was like, am I creating for fun or am I creating to attract clients? And that's the crossroads I'm at now where I'm like, my podcast was never meant to be a podcast about podcasting, and it started turning into that. So I was like, you need to probably separate these entities and make one podcast that's fun, creative, outlet, talk about whatever I want. And then there's another one that's probably a podcast funnel into my business. And I think that's really helped me being like, it's okay to split it up and change your mind. Like, I've held on to like, oh my God, I've had this podcast for 7 years. I'm not allowed to change it. It's going to be weird. People are going to be confused. And I'm like, people are not idiots. Like, people will understand. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. You should have a podcast about podcasting and then a fun one that you do just to express yourself. So I just want to like reiterate to anyone out there, like, it's okay to change your mind. You're going to get discouraged. If anything, my podcast downloads have gone down, but I feel like I'm creating a better product. So for me, I'm like, this is what I wanted to do. You know, I feel good about what I'm putting out. So it doesn't really matter about the downloads if I like what I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's back to like the qualitative data. Yeah. I'm curious, do you guys have any rituals or like practical tips? Like before you record a song, are you like doing breath work or meditating or pulling a tarot card? Like, I want to hear about these quirky little essential things that you have to do before you create.
I think I'm inconsistent. I think I'm like, I have a ton of different types of rituals that change all the time. I'll mention the artist way again. I try to do what they call the morning pages, which is 3 pages of journaling in the morning. It's supposed to do it every day. I do not do it every day. But that helps clear my head a little bit. When it comes to actually recording, I think the reason that I do it, the reason I keep coming back to it is I process my life through music, through making music, and there's 1,000 songs that may never see the light of day that help me get through something. And so the ritual of coming to the end of a day that I might feel a particularly strong emotion, it's usually the more difficult emotions are the ones that I find more productive to process through the music. And I'll write a song, call it a song, and just set up my iPhone, press record, and play for like 20 minutes. And I'll say what comes to my head. A lot of times it's like gibberish, but I know what chords feel sad, and I know what chords feel happy. And I just try to put it out instead of keep it in. And so the ritual of like, processing my life by sitting at the piano feels natural to me. I think that's why I started in the first place. Like when my grandma died at the funeral and my dad went off to war. But so that I keep coming back to. And I think the other thing is I identify as very extroverted. Like I love being around people. And carving out time to be by myself, I think a lot of us can relate to, especially on the more introverted side, is essential to recharge. But I have to very like seriously like plan it, otherwise it won't happen. And that's when I don't think I process that much with other people. I process alone, probably like a lot of us. And so saying no to things is a constant ritual that I try to improve on. And I think I'm getting better. But I think the ritual of saying no makes it a little bit, like takes the pressure off of, yeah, say no. And make it a ritual if you need to.
That's weird. You're going on a yacht tomorrow. I didn't see you say no to that.
Yeah, I did say yes. If there's a yacht involved, if anybody has a yacht, I will usually say yes to that.
Yes. Do you have any creative rituals, processes, morning routines?
Creative rituals, no. But managing my energy and keeping my head clear, or at least a little bit of thinking ground, that is very important. Because it's a startup, so there's a lot of context switching. And my rituals then, they lean heavily on reading business books and, of course, podcasts. And the idea is, the attempt is to get ideas that I can implement in improving our processes, basically. So, but a big piece of it is just managing my energy and making sure that I keep my head clear, because of my day is never like, it's never the same. You know, there's always, oh, an order just came in. Mm. So now that means I need to run around to suppliers, get materials, or I speak to a designer, a product maker to refine this product, get it together, and it's still a small operation in our garage. Then maybe I might have to outsource some processes as well. So there's never really a routine in terms of my work. So there's no routine that helps me prepare for the process except for just making sure that I stay healthy, I'm well rested. It affects my energy, mm-hmm. of course. And my personal life as well weighs in. So when that is good as well, then I'm good and ready to run depending on whatever the day brings.
100%. Anyone that wants to do morning pages but doesn't like handwriting, there's a website called 750words.com. So that's a really interesting way to get morning pages done. That's what I do.
So you type them into the website.
Yeah, I type it in.
And they log them for
and
you.
It logs and it. And you them. Get a sentiment. You get a word cloud. You get to see. Yeah, it makes it, it gamifies it. And I like need to be gamified. I need to be enticed by that. So that's something I do. But I also just think traveling inspires me. And I think for me, it's like you said, saying yes to things, but then carving the time out to say no. Last year, I went to Albania for 7 weeks and isolated myself. And I was like, I don't want anyone to visit me. I don't want anyone to talk to me. I'm on a self-funded artist residency retreat. And all I did was write. And that was the stuff that now is fueling my Substack. Mm. So I had to plan out my travels like that and have to be like, I cannot be in high social environments all the time. Cape Town is very highly social. This is the first thing I've done for work in 3 months. but that's my point. Like after this, I'm going to calm down and then go back to creative hermit mode. So I think a lot of us are digital nomads. And I think it's important to recognize, yes, we want to live our life and have free time and have fun with people. But if you're a creator, you need that time to process your experiences and reflect on what just happened? What did I go through? And let me write about it, sing about it, create about it, and build that time into your calendar.
I think what that brings to mind for me is also the cycles of the creative process. Like you said, you have this highly social cycle, and then you have this highly introverted, a monk cycle. And in the same, totally the same, I was in a cycle of I had to record an album, and I didn't promote that much when I was recording. I wasn't on social media that much when I was recording and producing. Now it's done. Now is the cycle where I have to put myself out there and promote. So I think accepting cycles, knowing that they won't be forever too, is it's almost ritualistic too.
Yeah. Nothing is linear and up and to the right hockey stick growth ever.
Yeah.
Well, I have one final question. I want to know, what is a piece of advice or the best advice you've gotten in being a creative or that you would give to creatives?
Can I say two things?
Yeah.
Put out shitty art. Put it out. Like you were saying about an MVP, put out a minimal viable product, whatever, put it out. Build the muscle. The other is this amazing quote from Jennifer Coolidge, if we have any Jennifer Coolidge fans in the house. I see some nods, yeah. she has this, she gave a speech, something like a commencement speech this past year, where she received a question about how do you battle imposter syndrome. And she says in her very comedic tone, I would so badly love to do the impression, but I wouldn't do it justice. But she says, go somewhere off Broadway, go somewhere where there's a show, they're making something, there's almost nobody in the audience. You would be shocked at how many people are up on stage doing things and they're terrible at it. She said, let this be your permission. Go find people who have the self-confidence. And I don't think it's a blow at those people. They're doing it, mm-hmm. and they're on the path to improvement or whatever. But go see people make art. And a lot of times it won't be that good. Don't go buy the Broadway ticket. Buy the off Broadway ticket or whatever the equivalent is, wherever you are. And see people with confidence make things that you say, oh, my God, I can't believe they have the confidence to do that. And let that be your permission to make some art, whatever it looks like.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Amazing.
Sifiso, what about you? What best piece of advice, or what advice would you give to someone that wants to get
he
started?
He said it all.
He said it all.
Make shitty art.
Spot on. Just trying to think top of mind. I don't really think that.
Greg said it all.
Greg just hit the nail on the head.
I have a question maybe that was related. I often think about my art, if I turn inward, if I serve myself, there's a Rick Rubin quote about this, who's a producer. As soon as you start thinking about the audience, you're going to lose the audience. When it comes to music, So turn inward, make the art that makes sense to you. Do not keep the audience in mind because that is in service of the audience. Oh. I'm curious from like a product design standpoint, it feels probably different, but I don't know actually, but I'm curious and if there's advice you have around thinking about your audience.
So you need to understand the problem marketplace first. It's the only way you create any useful product, you know. So for a business developer, it's quite different compared to a creative because most of the time, you're just purely expressing yourself, you know. But for business, there is a strong need for whatever that you create. It needs to connect with the user, you know. And for us, we're creating simply fashion accessories, and it's not a Louis Vuitton or, you know, it's not stuff that people are just can't wait to get their hands on.
Yeah.
So during our talk tonight, I just had I could pick into a life of a musician. I think your creative process is much harder because the work that you put out, firstly, you like you said, you're sharing your life experiences. And you putting your face on it. My face is not on any of those products. So even if they bomb, you know.
Maybe they would sell faster if you put your face on it, you know what I mean?
Pardon?
Just stick your face on a bag.
Like he made this. Oh, this guy made it. Yeah, so it's really different. For me, it's truly just like, okay, we created this, it landed in the market, it wasn't well accepted. Okay, then we change it. But so there's a lot of the science, business is more science, I think. Art is really more art. So I don't think that I'm truly the right person to dispense, or should I say, given an opinion on your creative process. Because truly, I think life as a musician is, you truly have skin in the game, if I should say it that way, you know, which is truly a big thing.
What about you, Chelsea?
I would say no one cares about yourself as much as you do. Like, I would put stuff out on podcast episodes and just be like, okay, what's going
to
happen? Like, I'm
waiting
so nervous.
Drop.
Like, yeah, what's going
to...
And I'm like, everyone's like, great, great podcast, great job. Like, great. And I'm like, oh, my God, I was expecting either this thing to go one extreme or the other way. And I'm like, just know, we all have our own shit going on. Like, everyone's struggling with something. Everyone's dealing with something. Everyone is trying to work on something and make their dream happen. So no one cares as much as you do. So you have to back yourself. You have to bet on yourself. That was something I learned early on is like, you said, my best friends aren't my customers. Half my best friends don't even know what I do. They're like, I thought you were a yoga teacher. I'm like, 5 years ago, like, what is going on? So I think you have to bet on yourself and just really understand like no one cares as much as you do and to have that fire within to keep yourself going.
Amazing. Yeah. I actually think I have something to say now.
Go ahead.
The etymology of the word passion, I think it's Latin, it actually means to suffer, which is crazy, right? We're running around, oh, what's my passion? What's my passion? You know, and we think that's the key. That's where it all starts, the genesis of something great, your passion. Then we don't know that there's a degree of suffering that's involved in it. And part of it that people not really believing what you do, supporting you or not buying your stuff or bashing down your work, that's built into it. You know, I mean, the Beatles in Hamburg, long before they were the Beatles, they were dragging around their own stage equipment.
Yeah.
They were not the Beatles that now we celebrate. Yeah. But they went through that and totally. Performing in bars that people didn't even care who they were, but they were getting practice hours, you know. So that process will come when you're refining and improving, and where then maybe when you decide to create something, just know that there will be a degree of suffering in it. And just embrace it. Not that I'm saying it should be hard. Hard it will be, but the idea of the things, because it's my passion, then it has to be smooth and it's fun and I enjoy every bit of it. It's a fallacy, I think. It,
like you said earlier, it's really not. Like 95% of my day is doing shit I don't want to do.
Yeah, totally.
Yep.
In service of the 5% that you love.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I would love to open this up to the audience. Does anyone have questions? If you want to brainstorm anything with us, we have a musician up here, a product designer and a podcaster and a writer. Heather?
That's a great question. Do you want to take it?
My mom told me early on, I started talking about one of my exes, the one that fueled the podcast. She's like, you can't just talk about him on your podcast. So I was like, yes, I can. And if he wants to start a podcast and talk about me, he can, but he won't. And so I'm going to keep doing it and just see what happens. And he was the one that DM'd me 2 years later and was like, your podcast is really amazing. Like, I'm really proud of you. Just want to let you know that. And so I would say half the time it surprised me that these people, like, they listen, but I don't know, didn't have anything to say. When I'm writing, I write in, I use abbreviations. I definitely change names. I don't say the person's direct name. I definitely don't get their permission because I am masking it. I'm changing their name. Don't want to be sued. and then with, I don't know, I think when you're talking about exes or, I talk a lot about love life on my podcast and I just keep it broad in general and try to just like hint at like this happened at this time with this experience. I don't say like this person's name in this specific location. Mm. And I think to your point, I'm like, this is my experience and I'm just sharing it and you're welcome to start a podcast as well if you want to talk about it. But until then, like, I'm not going to stop for you.
It's a challenge. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought a lot about that, about not wanting to air someone's laundry on a song. And of course, like, my friends know who I'm singing about, right? Strangers don't. But similar to Chelsea, I mean, if they want to write a song and put it out, they can, you know, and tell their side of the story. I try to be truthful at the very least. Of course, it's subjective from my side. I try to be honest with myself about the things I did wrong too. In a more recent example of like the song I put out 2 weeks ago, at the moment my ex doesn't talk to me, so there was no approaching the ex and talking about the song. If he wanted to ask me, I would totally be open to talking about it. I think everything that I have to say on there, I would stand by 100%. He may not agree with it, but I think it might, at the very least, if he wanted to reach out, it might lead to a productive conversation. I don't know. And so I think the moment you let someone else decide what you say, it doesn't really become your art anymore. So similar to how we said earlier, you know, putting yourself into the art and putting it out into the world might lead to some difficult conversations. It might. But if you're confident, you're equipped with the tools to have those difficult conversations and be like, this is my side of the story, and, you know, I'm sorry if it doesn't paint you in the best light, but it's my song. And you, I think, have to have ownership over it. And you could say, I understand this might be hard for you to hear and have empathy for the person, but you still get to say your side of the story. And I think implied in my telling of the stories through song and yours in the podcast, it's, this is my side, you know, it is subjective, but the moment you give up the keys to somebody else, like, is this okay? I think you lose something.
Yeah. I would say too, you made a good point that I'm not the hero in all my stories. Like, I don't badmouth them and talk shit about them and like paint them as the villain. Like, I tell my side, but I'm also like, here's what I learned. Here's where I was complicit in some of this. Like, it's not me just writing a bunch of like shitty songs or shitty podcasts about people. So I think that's, I think you made a good point there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Taylor writes it.
She said in an interview, like, if they don't want me to write about them, then stop treating me badly.
And there have been serious repercussions for, like, the men in her life for that reason. And they might have a lot to say about it, but she can still write it.
I think most art comes from pain or heartbreak or a loss. Yeah. And so I think think about it, if, like, we never had people writing about these experiences, we would never have half the artists or pieces that we do.
Yeah. And the more truthful I am about it, the more likely I think someone else will resonate with the thing that I'm saying.
Yeah.
And it'll mean something to them.
Yeah. Does anyone else have... Oh, Megan in the back. I'm going to repeat the question just so in the recording everyone can hear. I forgot to do this last time, but Megan asked on social media, like, how do we basically overcome jealousy and comparison and not get caught up in that in social media? That makes sense. Do you want to take it?
I don't have a social media account.
That's step one. Just don't have social media.
So, no. I hardly ever get feedback through our platforms. But in person, it's always people just loving our product. So, there's a whole of you. We have an audience tonight. I'll bring the products. You can touch them, feel them, and then give you some feedback. Maybe we'll see how I handle that. I don't really care.
Yeah. It's a great question. I think I probably do have some jealousy for the people who are able to sell out stadium tours and sing their songs and have people sing them back. So I think I have to manage that, but reframe it in a way that's, you know, if this art is meaningful to me, my art can similarly be meaningful to other people. So I think there's space for, there's probably room for all of us. I don't think that there's necessarily like a finite amount of space for all of us to have. Many artists can be successful simultaneously. And I think it would be just worse for me. I'd be holding on to the frustration of like, you know, there's always gonna be someone that's bigger, better.
Yeah.
It's something I manage, I think, more than just like, oh yeah, I just recognize it as, you know, inspirational. It's like, nah, it's hard. But if I think about the artists who have been meaningful to me that have inspired me, I think that if I can carve out my path and I think there's room for me, I think I do have a unique thing to say, then I can similarly positively influence other people. And yeah, I do think there's room for all of us. I guess that's the short answer.
For me, practical tip, I literally mute them or unfollow them. I'm just like, I don't want to see it in my feed. I actually went through a period where I just like purposefully made my feed things that I wanted to visualize of like, what would this make me feel like? So it was a bunch of like pictures of the Mediterranean and food and pasta. And I like purposefully flooded my account. I was liking things so that my explore page would feed me more of that because I needed to see that and be like, this is what I need in my brain. I think social media is a fire hose of information and we can get so flooded by that and be like, I should try that way. I should make graphics that way. I should do reels that way. And then that's what floods your originality and your unique voice. And so for me, that's something I've thought about is like, I've done it in the past. I've started like mimicking other people and I'm like, this isn't my voice. I actually had an ex-boyfriend say like, you're kind of different in person than you are on social media. And I was like, whoa, that's illuminating. And it's because I was just trying to be like everyone else out there. So I think that comment and just realizing like, yeah, I feel gross every time I'm posting this because it's not my true voice motivated me to be like, you need to be original and just take ownership of it. You're like, yeah, it does bother me. So I'm just going to mute it or unfollow it or block it and flood my feed. I'm a big fan of like crowding things out versus like deleting. So I'm like, let me crowd my feed with a bunch of images and inspiration versus whatever direct competitors or things I thought about before. So that's just a practical tip, I think, from my end.
I don't want anybody to know what my explore page looks like. I need to do what you're doing.
Right now mine's like Love is Blind and like random shit. Dear God.
We do have an Instagram page, very old Instagram page with very old posts, but it is there. So I did say I don't have a social media page. I think I was just speaking personally.
Yeah, you do have a social
media page. I've seen it. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah.
There aren't so many recent posts, but I think what you have there is great.
It's good.
Okay. Then we need to keep going.
Yeah, exactly. Just keep going. Well, we do have a pop-up in 15 minutes at the gin bar to see some of your products. So I think maybe one more question, if there's any other questions. Did you raise your hand, Ruan?
Just before the panel says anything, you are creative.
I know, but just not
you're just not expressing it.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Do you want to repeat the question, Charles?
Yeah, so we had Ruan ask in the audience, what is basically the intention or fuel behind our creative projects?
Yeah.
That be the right way? Or
like, what's the end, sort of an end goal or like a...
It's the driving force behind our creative endeavors.
Yeah.
May I answer first?
Yeah.
Great. So for me, it truly is personal. That very top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, like self-actualization, that's exactly where my eyes are set. The fact that I believe that I am a prolific entrepreneur, that through my work, I can impact humanity. For instance, I have a crazy goal on my mirror. It's written, serve 1 million customers every day.
Wow.
So that means I will be doing something really important for me to be touching 1 million lives daily, you know. So it's just living up to that belief, that vision of self, that actually I could grow, or I could bring this person to life, you know. So, which is itself is a creative process. And that's what keeps me going.
Mm.
Was it a bit too ambiguous?
No.
Oh, okay.
For me, the life force, the thing that I call it, the thing that keeps me going, is what I mentioned earlier about some younger person's life being positively influenced through me telling my story in a very open way. I think I've been scared of being honest about who I am and what my challenges have been based on where I've come from. And so it is a healing thing, like you said, to just tell it for what it is. And I feel after the initial bracing for impact, like Josh said earlier, like at rest, knowing I can show up without having to think about really anything besides like, oh, I'm honest. I'm very honest, you know, and if that feels like I can show up authentically in any space and be myself, and only through telling my story have I made like the strongest friendships that I've ever had in my life. Of course, like friendships prior to me being honest about who I was, like, were not so as authentic as they are today. And so maybe there's some selfish part of it that's like, I get to show up in the space as myself by telling the story and then positively impacting other people's lives through telling the story. I think those are the two things. And the story of connecting with my dad, for example, like it just pops up in interesting ways. And so the fuel is more like seeing it pop up in different parts of my life in a positive light keeps me going. And then also thinking about death and like coming, like looking back at my life and being like, I don't know what else I would do. I can't think of anything that matters more to me than just making this. It just comes so naturally to want to do this, and I can't explain that, but I feel it. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about dying is like a pretty big motivator to keep making stuff, you know?
That's actually a line on my Substack bio, is like these are stories about like looking at life from your deathbed. Mm. And I think I very much agree, where I'm like, if I were to die and my life flashed before my eyes, because I do think you're going to see a movie, it's like, yeah, what type of movie would I want to see? Like, oh, the movie where she had the opportunity to create something and then she just stopped because like her coworker said that was a stupid idea. Like, what a shitty movie that would be. Terrible plot line. So I look at my life the same way. Like, if I die and I see that movie flash before my eyes, what movie do I want to see? I also think it's quite therapeutic, and I find a lot of like, what's the word? It's very cathartic for me to write and podcast. There was a period where I couldn't keep up with the frequency of my podcast because I committed to doing it weekly. So I was like, I'm just going to stop, and like the podcast is done. This is not a thing anymore. I think I stopped for like 8 months, and I could feel it bubbling up of like, where do I put this energy? Like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to like express myself. And then I was like, okay, we're just going to get back into podcasting and not commit to weekly and just be like, you're going to get it when you get it. And then I felt like at peace again. So I think it's processing life. Is like that. I feel weird not processing. Like, life doesn't make sense to me until I write about it or podcast about it, and I think that's my fuel.
Mm.
Yeah.
Good question.
Yeah, great question. Anyone else? All good? Okay. Well, this has been amazing. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Sufiso. I have loved this conversation. I hope this was helpful for you guys. Thank you guys so much for coming. I really appreciate it, and it's just been so helpful.
Thank you.